President Trump's threats and rhetoric about immigrants.
But we have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out.
We are going to build a great border wall.
Build that wall.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. They are not our friend. Believe me.
Build that wall.
Familiar language referenced during and since the campaign has finally started to produce enough fear among the undocumented to get them to consider leaving, hiding, or beginning the long, confusing process of actually trying to become a U.S. citizen. The aggressiveness of the recent Trump executive order for a travel ban has run out the clock for some communities. People and the advocates they rely on to explain the U.S. system are suddenly scrambling amidst diminished options. Since the president took office, hundreds of individuals in 11 states have been picked up in deportation raids and in on-the-spot incidents when a person's status is disclosed to the authorities. Tanya Unzueta is the legal and policy director for the Chicago-based national advocacy group, Mi Gente. She's a young, seasoned advocate, often the only face standing between an undocumented person and deportation and detention.
President Obama released 6,000 people as part of his criminal justice reform and was talking about how this is a country of second chances. And literally 2,000 of those 6,000 people were actually deported and not introduced back into their communities. What we're seeing under President Trump is a much more aggressive effort. And part of the hard thing is that it's actually hasn't been a lot of new things. It's been mostly expansion of the things that already existed.
So a pretty well-oiled machine was created by the Obama administration, and now you have a much more aggressive driver.
That's right. And it's pretty scary because I do a lot of what we call deportation defense cases. And that means using community organizing and legal strategy to try to get immigration enforcement and other people with power to realize that when someone is being deported, there's actually a little bit more to that person and that there is a lot of reasons why they shouldn't get deported. Under President Obama, that was possible. Under President Trump, that feels actually really impossible. And so where in the past, there was a small chance that a father with five children who had one DUI might get out of detention, today we're telling those same people, I don't know what if I can do anything for you.
Tell me a story of something that represents just how different it is right now.
Sure. In Arizona, in Phoenix in particular, there's a long history of people fighting against the deportations that were happening because of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And what Sheriff Arpaio would do is he would raid workplaces and not only take people into detention, but actually charge them with working with false documents, for example. But they were able to prove that his targeting was racially biased, that there were serious constitutional problems to the extent that the Department of Justice actually went in and investigated Arpaio. There was one woman, Guadalupe, who had been a victim of these raids, who had a felony, but who had gotten some discretion under the Obama administration to be able to stay with her children. She would check in at ICE every so often to make sure that, you know, she hadn't committed any more crimes, that there weren't any other circumstances that they needed to take into consideration. A couple of weeks ago, she was called into the ICE office and then just didn't come out. She was taken into custody, and within that same day, she was deported. But that's actually been something happening across the board with a lot of the organizations that we work with, that our members whose cases we thought we had won are now being called into the ICE offices with a real risk that they won't come out.
So the act against one individual in a community can have a ripple effect throughout the entire neighborhood.
Of course, yeah. I mean, and we're seeing that just across the undocumented population, there's people who are not buying houses when they were planning to buy houses and invest in sort of their long-term future in the United States. There's people who are leaving the country. There's people who are train their children to make sure that they don't open the door when someone knocks, and that even if it's a police officer, because we've also seen a lot of immigration agents pretend to be police officers, that they won't open the door. And so the level of fear and seemingly that our only option is actually to hide is something that's pretty prevalent in a lot of communities. We've been trying to like give people a little bit of hope and really do believe that organizing and coming together is one of the key ways of protecting each other. But it feels really tenuous right now in terms of the amount of power that we have to protect ourselves.
What happens to the DACA recipients, as far as you can tell?
I don't know. I'm a DACA recipient myself. My sister is too. You know, so far, there's been this attitude that as long as we don't have a criminal history, we'll be fine. But there's also been this redefinition of what a criminal history means and what it means to have contact with the criminal justice system. So under the new executive orders, for example, really the range of people who are considered criminals is huge, from someone who has a criminal conviction to actually someone who's admitted to doing something that's illegal. And so I have misdemeanors, mostly having to do with civil disobediences to try to pass the DREAM Act, to talk about deportations. And under the executive orders, I'm a priority. And so it's been hard to figure out what's going to be heavier, whether it's the DACA sort of document that we'd have or whether it's that I'm considered a criminal.
A lot of people who voted for Trump, there are big numbers that suggest people support this travel ban. And this deportation order would say, well, if the net effect is that people are scared enough that they even go voluntarily or stay out, then we've done our job. That's a good thing.
And it's actually been a strategy from people on the right for a long time. Some of the state laws, like Arizona's SB 1070, are designed around what's called attrition, which is basically making an environment so uncomfortable that people will leave on their own. So like deportation by attrition. As someone who is undocumented, who lives in an undocumented community, whose family is undocumented, I don't understand how it's possible to wanna inflict such pain on your neighbors and your community members that they don't see any other option but leaving.
Have you considered going back to Mexico?
No, but my family has talked about emergency plans in case my particularly worried about my parents, actually, in case they get deported.
And they're not in a category that would suggest that ICE is after them at this point.
It's kind of complicated. Both of my parents have actually been very active in the immigrant rights movement. They've both been arrested for participating in peaceful civil disobedience.
Yeah, yeah.
And technically...
Have you?
Yeah, and so technically we are priority for deportation.
Mm-hmm. You're trained as an advisor, as someone who says, well, here are your options.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been turned into... You're basically just issuing warnings right now.
Warnings and trying to think about the long-term strategy. I mean, I think there's some amongst organizers and people who do this sort of work with people who are in deportation proceedings, there's this feeling that we just need to think long-term, because if we focus on losing every small fight that we have, basically losing individual people, like we're not going to be able to figure this out. I think we've already been losing people. And, you know, I actually recently just came from a meeting of organizers like me where we were just looking at each other like, how are you telling people that you can't fight for them in the same ways than in the past?
You can't call 911 right now.
I think it depends. I don't want to cause this panic either. I think that there's a lot of cities like New York, like Chicago, who are making an effort to make sure that some of those emergency services, that policing, that access to resources are separated from immigration enforcement. I don't think that's completely possible, right? When someone gets arrested, for example, their fingerprints get shared. And even if local police don't automatically turn someone into ICE, ICE may still show up at their homes. The few places where we've tried to put our energy into in terms of strategies that might work is figuring out how cities like New York and like Chicago that want to be sanctuaries for people can actually reduce the interaction of individuals with police.
Does sanctuary work?
Sanctuary, the way that it is now, provides some layers of protection for people. But even in places that call themselves sanctuary cities, immigration enforcement is free to do immigration raids in people's homes, in the streets, and in neighborhoods. One of the efforts that we're trying to do is find actual ways that the cities can intervene in immigration enforcement and in figuring out how to not get those people, you know, who aren't dangerous to our communities, who deserve a second chance, out of the lists of potential deportees.
You have a plan, don't you, if something all of a sudden happens anywhere on a street?
Yeah, we have plans. There's people who are organizing local networks of response, rapid response, they've been calling it. There's templates that we've put out there for people to document civil rights abuses and potential violations of policy. But none of that, as of yet, has meant that we can stop a raid or stop a deportation. It's been more of witnessing, which has been really frustrating.
And so you have to have your own plan B.
You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about other people's plans. There's only been one time in my life when I've had to deal with the deportation of one of my own family members, and that was under President Obama. I don't think I've actually created a plan for myself yet.
There are plenty of people who listen to this radio station who are sympathetic to what you're going through. But there's, you know, a huge number of people in America who say, she's nervous, great, it's working. What do you say to them?
I guess I would just ask them to look a little bit past that and into humanity and I think question, like, why they have those attitudes to begin with. I mean, I really believe that there's some stereotyping happening and there's a lot of misunderstanding about the way that immigrants affect communities. And I think that one day when we look back at the way that the Trump administration treated not only immigrants, but a lot of our communities, we'll see kind of like what history judges of this moment.
Tanya, thanks so much.
Thank you.